We all know your time is valuable. Whether you're hyper-focused on admin tasks like notes and billing, or simply trying to make a cup of coffee, or even run to the bathroom in between appointments, constant interruptions can derail your day. This podcast is sponsored by The Receptionist for iPad, a digital check-in system that eliminates the need to walk back and forth from your office to the waiting room to see if your next appointment has arrived. Clients can securely check in for their appointments, and you'll be immediately notified by text, email, or your preferred channel. Break free from interruptions and make the most of your time. I've been using them for almost 3 years now, and it saves me hours in my week. Start a 14-day free trial of The Receptionist for iPad by going to thereceptionist.com/private practice. Make sure to start your trial with that link, and you'll also get your first month free if you decide to sign up.
Hey everyone, welcome back to All Things Private Practice. I'm joined today by Erica Smith, who is a native of North Carolina and started their bio with, I hate this, but it can be way shorter, and here is the gist. So I'm going to try to pick out some of the key points. Group practice owner, therapist specializing in trauma, who has experienced a lot of chronic and invisible illness, specializing in racial trauma as well, a lot of experience with lived experience and all of these things, and really wants to talk today about creating a workplace culture that's accessible and equitable. And I think that's it's a great topic right now as people are looking for places of employment that are supportive. Through navigating life with chronic illness over the last 19 plus years and 30 plus years as a Black woman, originally normalized practices made adjustments prior to realizing that maybe this is just not normal for all people. Learned how to avoid stairs or prepare for them. Thank you, Google. Okay. Jump right into that. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So I was diagnosed with lupus and arthritis when I was 12. And fun fact about having arthritis in your knees as a young person is you don't realize how many things involve climbing, like elevating environments. And sometimes stairs are really hard. Sometimes they're perfectly fine. But anytime I would go to a new place, as technology progressed, so did the information or access to images of what something looked like. And so I learned to like pre-navigate environments before I would get there, which is actually kind of stressful to do. You don't think about the fact that, and I didn't even think about the fact that or communicate the fact that I was doing this. It just had become somewhat habit. Yeah. And when everyone else is taking the stairs, and because I present as able-bodied, I don't always want to look for the elevator. Then people are like, well, why are you using the elevator? And there's this new assumption of laziness, which is a whole other podcast. Use what your body needs. I also don't love elevators for just like, sometimes they're small and creepy looking. And I saw Final Destination. And so, you know, there's that. But I tended to work really hard to appear as able-bodied as possible. My own body's detriment at times.
For sure.
And I also have lung disease. So sometimes I'd be gasping for air and people are like, are you okay? And I'm like, sure, totally fine. Everything's fine. Nothing's wrong at all. But
yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, appreciate you sharing that. That's a good dive right in. That has nothing to do with our topic right now, but that's great to hear. It kind of does, though, like accessibility in a way, you know, and just how we often are trying to mask so hard to fit into society, to be like, I don't want to stand out or draw attention to myself or, you know, anything that even comes up as slightly inherently internalized ableism in some ways, too, where we're like pushing ourselves way beyond our capacity and limitations. So I've had the pleasure of meeting you twice already. You facilitated some anti-racist, anti-oppressive workshops for my group practice, and I really like your style because you are just very authentic, very real. I am the same way when I'm training, where I'm like, oh shit, I don't remember what I'm doing. Or like, I'm a little distracted right now on whatever we're focusing on. So I've really appreciated just the genuineness. And I want to name that if anyone's looking for a trainer or facilitator, Erica's really fantastic. So, okay.
Thank you.
Let's dive in. I have a group practice here in North Carolina.
In Raleigh. In Raleigh.
Okay. So tell me, you know, we can start anywhere you want, but thinking about your journey from solo practice owner to group practice owner, What's happening during those times?
Yeah, I'm going to try to make this as succinct as possible. I'll start by saying my career path was never therapist. That was never the journey, even in graduate school. People now laugh because they're like, not only are you a therapist, but you are a full-on group practice owner. I started in community mental health, and that was my first introduction to like mental health therapy careers. And the expectation that was placed on providers was absolutely unreal. But because of my personality type, if you give me an expectation, I'm going to try to meet it, mostly because I'm trying to appear as competent and as able as possible. To the point where I was getting very sick regularly. And of course, my health insurance was absolute. Can we say bad words?
We can say
absolute shit. Yes, my health insurance was absolute shit.
Have you met me?
And I was like, we're on the air. But no. And so that eventually let me think, as much as I loved the people I was supporting and serving, I thought I hated the field. I got another job for financial reasons at a group practice that was not community mental health, but they did accept insurance. And I was in community mental health for 4.5 years, in this group practice for 5.5 years. And the first couple of years, it just felt like rainbows and butterflies because everyone was happy and nice and smiling. There was no billable expectation. You can make your own schedule. And then because of who I am, I became more and more involved, and I, you know, had bills to pay. So I would work hard, and I just really started to realize I actually love what I'm doing. I just didn't love my previous work environment. And then 2020 happened, and a lot of conversations started happening, and I was pulled into conversations because I'm an obviously Black person. I'm a Black woman. I'm very open about that lived experience. And so I was pulled into conversations around Black in America, some of what was happening around racial justice issues. And then I was promoted to a leadership position. And it's always very interesting when you get behind closed doors and environments, because you learn how people really feel about things.
For sure.
And essentially, it came to light that our values were wildly misaligned. And, you know, just basic things like putting pronouns on a website was seen as not necessary because, and some of the conversation around that was like, well, I looked at these other majorly large conglomerate group practices and they don't put pronouns on websites, so why should we do it? I'm like, well, why is the standard of care, one, a place of work where the turnover rate for clinicians is appalling, and the standard of care is not what people deserve, and that's your measurement of success or measurement of like what we need to do. And there were lots of conversations around like pride flags, and there was a conversation around like, well, what will Christians think if they walk into this space and see a pride flag? And I had to leave. It was and it was a hard decision because I, for years, thought, but I was sort of like, had like, you know, the, what is it called? The glasses on or whatever, where everything seems pretty. Cause I was also comparing it to my time in community mental health.
And it feels like a dream for the most part.
So after time conversations with my business coach and some friends, I went solo practice. And fortunately, I had started my private practice like legally a few years back because I wanted to see more pro bono clients and they wouldn't let me at the group practice. So I started my private practice essentially just to be able to see more pro bono and like hella reduced rate clients. So all of the like nuts and bolts were there. So when I moved into solo practice, I was working at a friend space, and for a while, I was just like re-regulating my nervous system. So I was completely self-pay. I knew that wasn't forever. But I was like, right now, I just need to pay my bills and sleep and go to therapy because I feel lots of feelings about what I thought was a really beautiful place to work. And then I started really thinking critically about what I wanted to do next. And for years, people had been asking me to open a group practice, but I have a history of doing what other people want me to do and not what Erica wants to do. And so I was like, this is not something one can do lightly, and I need to figure out if this is what I want to do. I had been supervising clinicians for several years prior to that, and I really enjoyed that, loved that experience. I've been doing like consultations for EMDR. And so I started training and teaching and doing some equity work, and I was really enjoying that. And so I was like, there's clearly elements of like support and structure that I do really, really like. And there had been lots of initiatives I was trying to start at my old job. just because I felt like they would be really beneficial to the clinicians and also to the community that we were supporting. Right. And so that's essentially how I came into, I'm going to open a group practice. And has it been a whirlwind? So we officially opened June, like I got the keys like in March or April of last year. And then I hired my first, well, the team that we have now in June of last year. And it has been a learning curve. It has been, honestly, it's been fun. And it's been incredibly stressful. Like I cannot downplay.
I think it's okay for both of those things to be true.
Incredibly stressful. Really,
trust me. I think a lot of people listening are like, yep.
I remember being in my interviews and my staff will tell you this too. They're like, I literally told them, I was like, if I'm going to offer you this job, but I need for you to know this is a startup.
Yep.
I only know a third of what I'm supposed to know. And it's probably less than that.
Yep.
So I would love to work with you. And I need for you to know you're essentially coming to work at a startup. But here is why we're starting and here's what this place is about. And we were very open about that. And, you know, when I was looking for a space, I became very aware of how difficult it is to find an accessible building.
Yes.
And, you know, I had never really looked for my own office space before, but I was looking for a place with parking and accessible parking, a place that either was on the ground floor and was accessible or had an elevator that would work regularly. Because I've been in places where the elevator never worked or was like questionable. And ideally one with like accessible bathrooms, gender neutral bathrooms. And it started to feel like I was asking for a unicorn that could speak French, because not just a unicorn, but one that spoke fluent French. And so when we found the place that I'm currently sitting in, it was kind of like, this feels aligned and this feels like, and is it a perfect space? Absolutely not. But one, I can access it. My body can access it. It's on the ground floor, which is really important. And now that I lug so many, I'm always lugging in more shit for something. I'm like, this is great. Because if I was taking this up and down the stairs, I'd have feelings about it. And we have two single person bathrooms that are accessible, and just like accessible seating, comfortable areas, thinking about different personalities and what it means to be like potentially neurodivergent in this space, and just being really critical about like, what are some things that we can control and what are some things that we can name that we can't control. And so, yeah, that is a very short version. If you want to buy me alcohol, I will give you all the nitty gritty tea of the dirty version, but that is a short version of what would happen. Well,
I hope that gets to happen at some point in time between the two of us, because I'd love to hear it. I'm sure listeners would too. We, you know, but it sounds like a lot of people's journeys in a lot of ways, you know, accidental group practice ownership. Hey, I want to create something that people aren't doing because I don't want to treat people a certain way.
Yeah.
I don't want to have people have certain job experiences, and certainly leaving community mental health in that way too. I was in the same boat, like constantly sick, just all the things. And then, you know, in middle management, never satisfying anyone really. It's a tough place to be. And then I didn't go into group practice ownership, but I went straight into private practice ownership. And I did kind of the accidental group practice thing too, where my friend was just like, can you hire me during COVID? And I was like, dude, I help people build their practices. Like, I'll do that for you. I don't need to hire you. And he's like, no, I don't want to do any of the business shit. And I said very similarly, I was like, this is going to be a guinea pig situation. Like, I have no idea what I'm doing. And there are days, fast forwarding 4 years now, where I still feel that way. And we've made big transitions of like 1099 to W-2 to benefit all the benefits and everything. And it's hard. It's hard because we try really hard to create like an accessible environment that feels really supportive. And I've always wanted to create culture where it was like, this is very different than what you're used to in community mental health, group practice, whatever. And it's hard to balance that with like, but we have to pay the bills. We have to like, we have to somehow pay for the benefits that we are offering. And it's a hard mindset switch when you go from contractor to employee, because you go from like autonomy to we have to have some guidance and accountability. And I hate that piece. But I think it's about the vision and the value. And that for me is what's important. So it sounds like for you, accessibility, really wanting to have a place where people feel really supported, especially the people that you want to be supporting. And such a fascinating statement, right? Of like, what would Christians think if they came in and saw a pride flag? My web designer was like, if you say fuck on your homepage, you're going to turn off really conservative clients. And I was like, good. I don't fucking care. Like, that's not our goal, right? Like, yes, we live in Appalachia and we don't have to be for everybody. And that's okay. And I think that for me, that is unbelievably important in all of this. And now we are going to take a quick break to thank our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Alma. When I first decided to go in network with insurance, I found the whole process overwhelming. I can actually remember a couple of days that made me want to cry, where I spent hours on the phone being transferred or hung up on or not given clear answers or instructions. I knew I needed to get paid, and I also knew that I didn't know if I could do this by myself. If you're running into those same challenges, Alma can help. They made it easy to get credentialed a lot faster, handled all of the paperwork, and offered way better rates than I could have gotten on my own. They also make sure I get reimbursed within 2 weeks of every session so that I know when I'm getting paid. Visit helloalma.com/ATPP to learn more. That's helloalma.com/ATPP. Hey everyone, it's Patrick with All Things Private Practice, and I just want to invite you to join us in Scotland for our second Doubt Yourself, Do It Anyway Summit. That's happening July 14th to the 17th of 2025. We have 12 amazing speakers, 12 MBC CEs available in Edinburgh, Scotland, which is one of the most beautiful places I've ever been in my life. The link is in my show notes and on my website at allthingspractice.com. You can also join us in Greece in September if you're a leader or wanting to start a group practice. We have a leadership retreat happening on the island of Crete from September 6th to the 11th. Honestly, one of the most beautiful villages I've ever been to in Hania. And then in 2026, we have limited spots available in two different New Zealand retreats. One is for neurodivergent entrepreneurs, March 1st to the 8th of 2026. And then beyond private practice, moving beyond one-on-one therapy, creating alternative streams of income. That's March 15th to the 22nd, 2026 in Queenstown, New Zealand. Check the links. Doubt yourself. Do it anyway.
Yes. And this is something that I was saying to people, because at my old job and the group practice that I worked at, I was a contractor. And so I was saying things on my, I had started a website. I was saying things on my Psychology Today intentionally to leave people out. I had pronouns in my thing because that was important to me, but also because I wanted you not to come if this is how you felt. And I always say I had the privilege of being Black, so obviously racist clients do not come to my office. And so I was having conversations with some of my supervisees. They're like, how do you get these people out of your office? And I was like, well, it's a great question. I'm not, that's not a problem that I have, but here are some things. And so even on our website and our lobby, it's very clear where our values are, and it's like front page and front and center. Because we want you to go somewhere else. This is the Confederacy. This is the Confederate South. There are plenty of very conservative, value-aligned places for you to go.
Absolutely.
This is not one of them. And being loud about that is very, very okay. And we, you know, we talk about voting and we talk about politics. So we talk about, you know, there was a comment made by, so I have my staff here, but there's also a couple of commissions that like are, they just use our space, but they work for themselves. And one of them was like, we have Know Your Rights cards in our lobby in English and Spanish. Mm-hmm. And one of her clients was like, I saw these cards in your lobby. What is this about? And I was like, that's a you problem. And the clinician laughed, but it's like, we are, and we're always thinking about like, what are things that we can do to support our community? And, we're doing a drive for, there's a new gender affirming closet in Wake Forest, which is like 45 minutes from us. And so we're doing a clothing drive for them in the lobby. And like everything that we do is very intentional because we want to be very clear. Like we are a space that welcomes humans. And it's okay to be very loud about that. And it's okay to recognize like, while I'm going to support anyone who walks in my door, I'm also going to be very clear about my values. And as a social worker, I do not feel any shame around that. And I think that is not something that was welcome in jobs past.
Right.
And so even some of the things that our team says that they've experienced in their internships past, I was like, what was said to you? Yeah, that's not right. I don't think that's legal. I don't know what's legal anymore in this current iteration of America, but I don't think that it used to be legal. And so, it's very, and I think sometimes, when I would talk about accessibility, people always go straight to wheelchair ramps and, automatic doors, which matters, like
for
100%
sure.
Matters. But I think, do whole people, do different types of people, different, feel welcome in your space, feel affirmed in your space, feel like they can access your space. And when I'm working with other clinicians, one of the things I say is like, it's okay if you currently have a 3-year lease on a third floor office. That's fine. Do you communicate that clearly to people so they can make the choice versus being in a situation where they're stuck on the first floor because they didn't know?
Yep.
And so what are ways that you can describe your office to people so they can make an affirming choice, or they can see you virtually, or they can see someone else?
Absolutely.
They're not stuck in a situation where they are having to once again feel othered because your space didn't communicate, because we weren't clear about what we were able to do. Because bills are expensive, to your point. Like everything is expensive.
And I think that, that's a conversation for a completely different topic too, right? Mm-hmm. But like in the accessibility piece, I love what you're saying of like making it really clear, making it really mm-hmm. transparent, mm-hmm. and trying to think outside of the box to think of everyone's comfort instead of our own. And I think that's mm-hmm. so often the case when we're like designing workplaces or policies or procedures. It's so easy mm-hmm. to default into like, this is the set of policies that people say they have, or like, this mm-hmm. is how I bought this template from this person, or like, to your point, I looked on other people's websites to see what they're mm-hmm. doing. It's really easy to go into like black and white, cookie cutter, one size fits all approaches. Mm-hmm. But in reality, like you're mentioning, the lack of accessibility, when you take that stance and that approach, does mean that a lot of people that you want to support are not going to feel comfortable in some way or another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think asking questions is so important.
Yeah.
And so, when I was doing a lot of this work and thinking about spaces, and I just asked people a lot of questions. I'm like, what would be important to you in this environment? What would not be important to you? And sure. The goal isn't to make everybody happy, because that's impossible. The goal is to sort of just think critically around, what can I communicate? What's within my control? What can I do? Sometimes, Shana, what can I afford? Like, I would love to have translation services available immediately for everyone. And I price that. And that is a later thing. Just thinking through, like, what are ways that I could communicate what we do and don't have? And even from just like having different types of seating in the lobby that different people can access. And I will say, being someone who's lived in my body, I am very aware of chairs. And because having arthritis in your knees, having lupus, like, you spend a lot of time getting up and down places, and some places are just really hard. And so something like one of the like unaware things that I would do is I would scan a restaurant for seating and figure out like, where can I sit easily, or where it's going to be really hard for me to sit. And that didn't become very clear to me until someone else pointed it out. And they were like, you tend to go like, what is happening? And I'm like, oh, I'm looking to see what seat I can get in and out of. And it was because for me, it was just what everyone does, but it's not. And so sometimes even naming that, because I do work with a lot of clients who are also living with various chronic illnesses. Sometimes me naming that gives space for people to be like, oh, this is something that I do, and I didn't think about the fact that like, maybe this isn't usual. And I'm like, okay, so what are ways that we can think about this as we're making decisions? And right now I just completely lost my train of thought, but yeah, that's what I was like, what was I talking about just now? And this also happens to me, but
I can relate. Yeah. Hard relate to that, but I think that's such a great point, of paying attention to the accommodations that you're trying to build in for your own self mm-hmm. on a daily basis mm-hmm. and how to make life a little bit easier, and then applying those, because then the thought process is like, well, if I'm thinking about this, other people mm-hmm. are thinking about this, right? Like, I'm not the only one who's experiencing this thing. Mm-hmm. So I like the intentionality behind that of like, hey, I'm going to take my lived experience and I'm going to translate it into how I kind of operate my business and how I support mm-hmm. my community and my staff. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Again, I just think that too many people don't do that. And it's not a knock on those of you listening who are group practice owners who are like, no, it's very much like 9 to 5 in the office, like no mm-hmm. other alternative options or expectations. But like, for me, I've always done things in a very unorthodox way and I never knew why until mm-hmm. recently. But ultimately, like, if you want to work telehealth, if you want to have mm-hmm. office space, like giving options is important and talking mm-hmm. about why those options exist is important. And like, mm-hmm. I think it's transparency is a thing that also is missing from a lot of group practice cultures. And mm-hmm. we might be a little too transparent with like, here's the peek behind the curtain of all the numbers. Mm-hmm. Here's why we have to do the things that we do. Mm-hmm. But I would rather give more information than less because I've mm-hmm. worked in environments where like, it was always like these secret mm-hmm. meetings where like nobody was ever in the know about anything. And mm-hmm. we really can't understand why anything's being done, but you also feel mm-hmm. like you have no autonomy or locus mm-hmm. of control in your day to day. And that fucking mm-hmm. sucks.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. And I think, we are also very open about lots of things. And sometimes I'm like, maybe you don't want to know this, but so yep. I always tell people, like, you can tell me if you don't want to know this. You're like, Erica, I don't care. But I want you to know what's going on because I also know that some of my staff is probably thinking about like, hey, do I want to do this someday? And I'm like, totally. That's great. Like, let's talk about it.
Absolutely.
Here's how much we spend on these things. And some of it is, you know, there are some things that I know I'm spending too much money on because I'm like, I would rather have this version than that version because this version is easier than me. I was joking. We just switched to having like we had this big water filter thing in our lobby and I now get the water jugs delivered because I was lugging them in and it was like a whole exercise in mental strength. And so now I have to deliver it like once a month. And at first I was like, this is such a waste of money. And then I was like, my body is fucking tired of lugging yes. these things from the store to yeah. my car, out of sure. the car. It was just yeah. like a whole thing. And the first time the guy delivered it, he was like, are you okay? I was like, I'm just so happy to see you lugging these things in for me. And so sometimes it's like, I'm doing this for my mental health because I can't. But other things, it's like, I clean our bathrooms and I like love Fridays because I just clean the office. I'm like, it's something that I have full control over. It's yep. like cleaning the toilets. And I can do that. I listen to my audiobooks about dragons and it's great. And what more do I need? And so, yeah. But it has been very much a learning curve. I love it. And I also am like, once a day, I'm like, why did I do this?
Yeah. Totally normal. Mm-hmm. I think about selling my practice every single day of mm-hmm. every single year for the last 4 years. And I'm like, mm-hmm. wouldn't it be nice to just not be a part of this? Not have to be responsible for other human mm-hmm. beings, live on in a cabin in the woods where I don't have to talk to anybody at all. And it mm-hmm. really does take up mm-hmm. space in my mind. But, you know, the community impact and the ripple effect and employing people and mm-hmm. giving good jobs feels more important to me than my sanity sometimes. So mm-hmm. weighing out on the seesaw at the moment, mm-hmm. but we'll see if that changes today or tomorrow. It could.
You know, I feel that in my spirit.
It's a moment by moment existence. Mm-hmm. And I think when you're really trying to intentionally set something up and do mm-hmm. things in a way that feels not only different, but the way you would want them to be in mm-hmm. order to give back to your community, to your staff, to make it as mm-hmm. accessible as possible, it takes a lot of energy. Mm-hmm. And I think it's worth it, but I also think it can come with frustration and stress. And mm-hmm. I think both can exist simultaneously.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And, you know, it has been such a joy to get to meet the clinicians that we have on our team and do fun shit with them and commiserate about the state of everything with them. Yep. And, you know, we go to lunch and sometimes we hang out and it's just been, and sometimes I talk about my experience and my first job as a clinician and they're like, you did what? I'm like, it's just what we all did. It's like,
sure.
Yes, yeah. I was in some stranger's house and no one knew where I was because I was doing in-home therapy and yep. they threatened to take me out back because they were mad at me. Yep. And no one would have found the body. But, you know, fun memory.
Yeah.
We
don't know what we don't know. And we don't think we have any other options. And you're just kind of like, this is what you're supposed to do. And eventually I'll burn myself out enough where I become like this Gandalf-like therapist. And then I can start my private practice. Then finally, I'm allowed to leave. And it's amazing how many of us put ourselves through the endless like bullshit and burnout and drain to our systems and make ourselves sick. And then it's finally like enough is enough. So thankfully there are opportunities out there for those of you listening where you don't have to experience the things that we've experienced in order to have a career in mental health therapy.
Yes. Yes. And you can have mental health while trying to support mental health as much as we can while trying to support other people. And I'm grateful for the fact that, like, for the most part, I like thoroughly enjoy coming to work every day. And that was not always my experience.
Love that.
So I'm sure I sit here.
Feels the same way too in a lot of ways. And I'm sure they also have days where they're like, fuck this, I don't want to do this. But I bet the good days outweigh the bad significantly. It's a stressful job. It's a stressful career. It's a stressful path, but it is really worth it when we can kind of create and cultivate these types of cultures, experiences, and these types of settings. So well done on everything that you're doing.
Well, thank you. And thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. So everyone's least favorite part of the show where you promote something for yourself. So tell the audience where they can find you and what you're offering.
My practice is called Whole Mentality, WHOLE Mentality. And so that's where you can find us and our mental health stuff. And then I have a consultation business called It's Erica Kendra. It's ericakendra.com, and where I do equity consulting. And the big thing that has been requested most often lately is transitioning from solo to group practice. And so that is my current offering, is working with folks who are interested, who already have an established solo practice, but they are wanting to expand to group. And I'm working with a group right now who's doing that expansion. And I really enjoy the work. And if you've gotten a little bit of a sense, I'm very much about, this is what I did. I don't think you should do it this way. And here are some steps. And so, you know, we go over everything from your orientation manual to hiring practices, and also like how to create a workplace culture aligned with your values. And so if you're interested in that, you can find me on itserikakendra.com. And that's also my fun Instagram, where you'll see all kinds of bullshit and tomfoolery.
I need to follow that one. I just practiced one and I was like, yeah, that's cool. But okay, cool. All of that will be in the show notes for all of you to have access to. And again, I've hired Erica, can't recommend enough. So you'll have all of those links and all of that information. Erica, thank you so much for coming on and making the time.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And to everyone listening to the All Things Private Practice podcast, new episodes are out on Saturdays on all major platforms, YouTube. Like, download, subscribe, share. Doubt yourself, do it anyway. See you next week.